Blog Talk Radio.
Blessed souls, we're alive because we merit to stay alive in this existential, eternal, yet humanely, mundanely moment. Baruch Hashem, blesses our Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience, which I'm not ashamed to say is over 7.7 billion human souls and human bodies. With Creator's help, our broadcast is now taking place on February 4th, 2018, starting now, 10:31. Jamaican time from the Diamond of the Caribbean, corresponding to 11:31 a.m. live from Turtle Island, equals a.k.a. the USA Unified Soul Actualization. We plan on speaking with co-host Sila Media Prolific Lecturer Jerome Sage Buckler, who dwells within his spiritual, cognitive, emotional realm coined under the Tree of Life. Butler is driven to tap into his deep ancestral wellsprings of divine source, correlating, relating, and developing a dialogue with other human souls, intended to guide human dog towards analyzing the moral and ethical nature as we as human beings are well advised to explore. Today's program content will focus on discussing various perspectives relating to art and culture, serving as a potent healing force for individual international cultures. And one example of healing power of art can be evidenced by our co-host's invitation from 6 years ago via a Facebook video, https://www.facebook.com/treeoflife/videos/207-963-538-0688/, and his current cyberspace efforts via Sila Media, which you just type in. If you go to YouTube, just go type in Jerome Sage Buckler, and you'll find a smorgasbord of wonderful, inspiring teachings. And as we wind down the music from Zusha, and this is called Yoel or Joel's Niggin. Without further ado, we're going to bring our co-host, broadcasting live from the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jerome Sage Buckler. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brother Don. Always my audio. Is it clear?
I hear you crystal clear, like a crystal clear view of the Blue Mountains in Jamaica on a sunny day.
And actually, you must be singing the spirit, because you actually have a very clear view in the Blue Mountains, of the Blue Mountains in Jamaica. and I have with me avid listener to your program, Archie Patterson. You always hear me talking about her from Greensboro, and you have her here with me today, so it's a blessed connection. I also want to say shout out to Cindy and Kyle. And they are in, St. Anne, Jamaica, above Ocho Rios, and they're avid listeners of the program as well, too. And Brother Dan, I love your directives towards analyzing the very essence of art and the healing potential in art. I recognized this thing before I even created Organic Arts Jamaica, in the sense that when I just started poetry, there was a lecturer at the Edna Manley College, and she was also a trained psychologist, and she did an art therapy program at the university hospital, because they have a psychiatric ward. They call it popularly in Jamaica Ward 21, and this is where they clinically treat the light issues within mental health in terms of medication and such diagnosis. So she had an art therapy program. I was doing poetry at the time, and she invited me. Now, I must say, this was, I think, part of the catalyst for the creation of Organic Arts Jamaica. because, and even the 4-H life, because what happened was, when I went and, you know, there were some people playing guitar and, you know, doing, you know, music, and I did, you know, some music from my heart and some poetry from my heart, and the patients were so transfixed that it shocked me. One, I had the notion that the mentally challenged or the mentally ill was somehow not coherent, or they had not proper cognitive functions, and that was knocked out of the water, because number one, after I finished, one of the particular patients, she came to me and said, "Can I have your autograph?" I was shocked. No one had ever asked for an autograph. This is poetry in Jamaica. Who asked for an autograph? But she was so moved by my presentation in words to offer healing that her response really changed me a lot. So I realized that art as a form of therapy was something, throughout the performing arts, was something that I was going to study. Not just in the academic sense, but as like a journey through life. And I started out in that process. I met many individuals who were doing programs of some similar degree, some therapy. So that is why I came up with organic arts, which I call it unique self-therapy, right? Because it is life-transforming, unique life-transforming self-therapy. And the essence is, why is it unique, and why is it life-transforming, and why is it self-transforming as well? Because number one, when I started painting, I got the sense of healing from the first moment I put the canvas up and I put the paint on the brush and then applied it to the canvas. Something transpired that never before was such peace found. Now, mind you, when I perform on stage, the poetry in the early stages, there was a sort of high gain introduction of positive vibration into my being, but that would come only after I would have satisfied the internal drive, because sometimes you go to a show and there are other forces that interfere with your presentation or what you want it to come, i.e. just human testosterone, male-dominated competition. It's all about popularity. Right. But the message I was about to bring was always interrupted a lot by that. But when I painted, there was no interruption in the flow of that healing source of energy. It transformed my life, further affirming that the hearts are truly healing, that it is a form of therapy, that when a person can paint their way out of maladies, paint their way out of deep psychosis, it might seem a simple statement, but with each stroke of a brush, a person reveals deeper parts of their psyche than sometimes even words can say.
Beautiful, beautiful. I mean, you know, just as you mentioned how I tapped into something by talking about the Blue Mountains, you tapped into what I was going to ask you. How did you begin this journey of various forms of artistic endeavors? And I feel obligated, as a cross-cultural seeding in unity with your words, is that last night in preparation for the show, and actually I was meditating in my congregation before the congregational prayers yesterday morning, thinking about just about you and your efforts. And I said, well, let's look up the word art as it is in the Hebrew. And it actually has a multiple presentation of words in the Hebrew, which has a very, very profound, it's not just, as you say, it might be simply the paintbrush on the canvas, but art translates out, and I'll just say the Hebrew, then I'll quickly translate into the English. Melechas, it's a type of work. Umanut, it is a type of craftsmanship. Arma, it engenders in the person a type of cunningness, a type of refining of the intellect. Even the word Torah, which usually is in the biblical sense, meaning there's some sort of instruction embedded in art, and machashevet, it is a type of thought process. Now, for the word for artist is the word sayar, which means how a person can draw, can take from within the mind's eye and manifest that out on the canvas or on the pottery wheel or whatever form of art they want to do. And again, the word uman, which is related to the idea of saying amen. It's a confirmation of some sort of blessing. It is a confirmation of some sort of awareness that one is tapping into, and this is a teaching from one of our great sages, the Rambam, that when human intellect is in a moment of development, going from greater degree and higher in caliber, a person is making him or herself into a vessel to receive pure intellectual form. And then there's a merging between their human intellect, his or her intellect, whoever it may be, what is something which is known as Seichel HaPoel, which is known as the active intellect, which a profound emanation flows through. At the most highest level, the people who access this active intellect are the prophets. And this manifests in the phenomenon of prophecy. But actually, on another level, according to the Rambam's teachings on metaphysics, the active intellect is in the lower, last rung in the hierarchy of transcendent incorporeal entities that are subordinate to the Most High. The active intellect emanates a whole range of abstract human thoughts, which the human mind can then tap into according to the individual's mental disposition. So what I'm trying to humbly bring out, Drumsage, which many people don't take note of this. The art is an expression of tapping into godliness, joyfulness, whatever you want to call it. Your take on these matters.
Thank you, Brother Dan, for such a deep and moving and clarifying research on the Hebrew take on the essence of what art is, because I'm just listening and our choices here, and we are very transfixed as we were listening. And I like the part, the first thing I could connect to was the essence that one, that art is from the divine source, and those who interpret are like unto the paint brushes or the instruments on the potter's wheel, like likened unto the creator being the potter and we being the clay. And the third thing is that I recognize that the artists truly are instructors, and we are mediums in another manner of speaking. Putting that all together, I then begin to recognize that to really absolve and absorb oneself into art is to truly let go of a fixed perception of oneself that is possibly based upon environmental, the familiar conditions of the structures of your society. And I put this together in the first part of my program in organic arts, what I call it, Shattering the Glass Ceiling, where I truly examine within the human psyche and the human intellect and intuition, what is it that an individual is fulfilling when they say, I am becoming the dream of what I've held, whether it's something that I think I want to be the best, you know, singer, actor, you know, poet or teacher, you know, professor. Where does that come from? Where is the ontological, the empirical source of such a desire? What sustains that desire? What maintains the desire? And I began to understand that a lot of our constructions and configurations are based upon the environmental conditions, especially in the psyche, when our families have designed their physical and emotional environments a certain way. And when it confines the spirit, now, because I'm getting to it, when it confines our spirit, the artist cries out for the unspoken, for the easily unseen essence of human existence, i.e., back to the essence that art is a medium to which God speaks to us, to which the divine speaks to us, and in pictures in us the greater spectrum. So, onward in the point, I also recognize through my processes of helping others to truly separate the image they've been given from the true presence that they are, and see what will I truly become must be that which is natural within you, that which does not need some form of contrivance, some form of design. If you have to be designing it, then there's some issue. It should be authentic and original. Art taps into, speaks from the original. That even the branch of metaphysics of art in it, even the branch of philosophy of art in it, poetic art is not just a symmetry of words. Their examination into the deep psyche and the impending psychosis that comes when the psyche is out of balance. So art speaks to a malformed society, a voice of God, that we are inspired by this internal drive, a fire that makes us more than just a limited spectrum, that if the human is 10%, then the artist got to be 50 or 75% the way towards fulfillment, our awakening, our actualization, if that's a better term. It's not just intellect, though it has intellectual, you know, properties and capabilities. It is truly the act of intuition through intellect and expression on the part of through the spoken arts, through dance, you understand, on the canvas, you know, or even in modern contemporary performance art forms. The essence is that it is a godly communication. It is a cry out, a cry from within, for us to respond to each other, for us to recognize the things which makes us harmonious that are not spoken, that are not seen, that are forgotten. And sometimes they have political implications, sometimes they have religious implications, and sometimes they have adverse social implications. But the fact is, it's art, and it is a message, a speaking to, a speaking from divine.
Beautiful. I, as you were talking, Drum Sage, I also wanted to give a, you know, for those who are not familiar with the Hebrew, that from just the classical, I mean, this is from the famous Webster Dictionary here we have in America. I'm using my father, may rest in pieces, the dictionary that he once gave me. So how do we look at art from a classical English, and I guess from the more anglicized version from England or made of Jamaica, I think everyone could agree on the following definitions of art. Number one, the human ability to make things, creativeness. Two, skill. Three, any specific skill or its application. Four, creative work generally or its principles, making or doing things that have form and beauty. Art includes painting, sculpture, architecture, music, literature, drama, the dance, etc. So I think this is a very important point, Jerome Stage, to share, and maybe you can share some of your experiences as someone who has coached other people, develop their artistic skills as you have developed yours, that when we deny human ability to make things, we're stifling soulful expressions. We stifle their skill building. We stifle human development, how to learn how to apply an innovative insight that no one ever had up until that point. We stifle the expressions of when we talk about beauty, from a Hebrew cultural perspective, we talk about the gathering together of things which otherwise unto themselves may not be so beautiful. They might be nice, they might be not so beautiful, but when they're part of a greater sum, a greater totality, their beauty not only is enhanced on a personal level, it enhances the community and the culture and the nation as well. If we promote the idea of human development through this idea of pictorializing some sort of idea, and again, either putting it on the canvas, put it on the clay potter's wheel, putting it into written word sound as power manifestations in vocalizing it through poems or singing or plays. So you're taking this out of that if we stifle this human endeavor, part of the human living experience, we're actually stifling not only the beautiful development which should be for every human being on the microcosmic level, we're also creating damage to the macrocosmic picture of human society and culture.
Exactly. I totally agree. I mean, the fact of, as you say, crafts building and the essence of development of, you know, manual and functional skills that uses the hands, the mind, and part of the emotional system to construct things is number one therapy. And that's what I figured out. Because if you were literally using your hands, it suggests that you're using your mind, which suggests that you're using your emotions, and that in harmony creates an experience of self that we who are cognitive in behavior understand that it's a more wholesome and balanced perception and way of being. So art is not just an external function of showing our creative possibilities, or showing what we have interpreted from the observations and the experience of life, but rather art is the expression of our lives. Because again, when you look at the metaphysical and the philosophical within art, not just the our picturing in terms of the canvas or the tapestry, or just in terms of the functionalities in design or structural design in terms of society, but in terms of the psychomatic, the mental processes could be balanced with the emotions that is fashioning these things. If we are devoid of more subtle, deeper, beautiful expressions of source in us, then we are this didactic and almost very mechanicalized vision of art. And we call it in the modern scape a kind of a design-based art that doesn't have that kind of intuition, that sense of wonder. Now, when a person goes into the experience of self, the experiential nature, there are things that were not written in a book, back to the metaphysical and philosophical in art. It's not written in a book. It's driven from the experience of the individual that there's a life happening. And let's look at trauma. Sometimes an individual is clinically said to have maybe a bipolar disorder or some other psychiatric disorder. But yet you and I and the world have benefited from the most deepest internal examination of the human psyche by someone who is said to be unbalanced. And the images, let's say tapestry, that comes from such individuals beguiles the mind of a simple individual. They are so in awe. We are astonished at the deep intricacies, and let's go to mathematics now, and symmetry of geometry in these designs, which these things are quantum mechanical and are examined by the highest minds of our day and time. So let's examine truly what is art. Isn't art all included? The mathematical, the metaphysical, the philosophical, it is even the mechanical structure. So if the person or the creators of this art is more in tune with the wonder of creation, the more divine mathematics and the mathematical understanding of creation, then the symmetry in their sculptures, in their pottery, will take you off the curve of familiarity and squarely place you into a new space of awareness. And this is what art does. It is so weird that the artist's intent and the viewer's reception is sometimes so indifferent, but yet it satisfies the same need. A place in presence, a moment captured, an idea examined, a hurt exposed, a trauma released.
Yes.
Art is a language likened then to keys being played and the musical scale that when it is rendered at its highest level, it can be very harmonious. At its lowest level, it can be discordant, disharmonious, and hurtful. And this is one of the essence of when art is hijacked by a cold mind, or a mind insufficiently emotive. There's no empathy. The empathetic nature in such a mind is low. So design concepts that are based on scarcity, sparsity, and some amount of confinement, to me, is not art. And the Spirit is correcting me and said, don't say confinement, and I should correct it and say limiting, limitations. Modern design spaces based upon a psyche of limitation does not impress me. I like the art that has allowed us to function, i.e., Eastern idea of space and design feng shui, I like the ideas of art and design where the soul can function, or art, or we as our ancestors design our homes to be harmonious with the flow of nature, not to go against the harmony of the flow of nature. And that, to me, is something that I truly respect in the process of what, and how heart, sorry, and how heart has been from the heart, if you get what I'm saying. Pardon the patois. You know, sometimes patois is the first thing for me in Jamaica, and so I have to sometimes adjust, you know, the first thought to the English to make it more clearly palatable. So the art, the A-R-T, moves the H-E-A-R-T in such astounding ways that it is amazing. So imagine now when the A-R-T comes from the H-E-A-R-T, or resonant, beautiful, and astoundingly, unconditionally sourceful it can be.
Beautiful. Drum Sage, something that I like what you talked about, this whole idea of the mechanical view, which basically now I think is seen more like, I would like to use an allegory, it's an axe in the hand of the human who needs to chop down a tree. We don't think that the axe is anything more than that, because the axe itself had to be molded. So mechanics is something which is a useful tool, but in the world of quantum mechanics, and a very important point, which I think is so positively affected by artistic endeavors for all human beings at all different levels of development, is the art of becoming more of neuroplasticity. The fact with each human activity, as long as the person is consciously aware as he or she interacts, again, we'll review this over and over again, the paintbrush hitting the canvas, or the hand on the potter's wheel, or the hand writing the poem or the song or writing the new lick, it's going to reprogram an area of the brain which not had been perhaps previously developed. And with that being said, I'd like to exponentially jump to another area which I mentioned to you before the program. When we examine the word organic, there are two Hebrew words and possibly a third that can be derived out as an ethical teaching. The word or of organic means light. And the modern patriarch of the Hasidic movement, the Baal Shem Tov, said that whoever knows the secret, or who plumbs the depths of revelation, whether becoming directly from Creator or excavating it out from oneself, knows the secret of the matter that is being revealed to oneself. Gan is referring to the garden. So what was the pristine feature of the Garden of Eden? That there was a tremendous light, because it was before the fall of the grace of human beings until we have the restoration through the line of Judah. And there was no hatred or jealousy or competition from human to human, except there was a force that was wielding that jealousy and that hatred and that sense of competition. That was the primordial snake who was injected with the poison of the Satan or the Satan. So we see the original condition of human being is to be organic. And the ick part is relating to which we can reason out an ethical teaching, where the Creator fused divine light into various forms of conduits. It doesn't matter at this point to name how many conduits there were, but the point is that the idea of bringing us back to an organic state of mind is to divest ourselves from hatred and jealousy and competition. And this is one of the things that I really caught my mind's eye. Several years ago, I saw this video, one of the Reggae Sum Splashes video, interviewing Peter Tosh, the late great Peter Tosh, and I look forward to his resurrection sooner days, along with Bob Miller, all the greats, all the sages of the ages. He says, "We're not in competition. We should be a community," meaning it should be the community of artists of all different endeavors coming together. And when we can do this without the spirit of jealousy, hatred, or competition, we are somehow, just as we talk about this active intellect at the beginning of the program, we're tapping into a higher light of the Most High to organicize the creation. Your take on this matter.
Beautiful, beautiful. And I love the way you said that, the organic. The harmony or the symmetry within the living cosmos was something that had intrigued me very much most of my life. So my research was always personal. Like they say, make yourself the first guinea pig. I was so into the darkness as a psychological terminology that I had to bring some amount of light to myself to be able to function. And as you can say, knowledge is the light of our consciousness, right? What we do, it is the wisdom of our experience. Just as that knowledge came in, I begin to realize that the harmony that is in the organic, that vegetations we consume by vegetation, I begin to realize that the blood in my veins to my skin burnt green. Oxidation and the oxidation of my blood with the atmosphere, I see red. When I begin to recognize substances and their original nature were deferred upon the experiences, how the environment was reacting upon them. So I realized that harmony was lost through a certain kind of, you know, behavior and attitude. And then how was I going to bring this across to a set of individuals that I cared about or those who were in need? And the first thought that really came was, as I heard you say, that art has the intellectual. So first was the intellectual. So I began searching information, and the information led me to a word called intuition, and then an experience, the intuitive nature, began to draw things to me within a sequence that was not familiar with me. So intuition is not chaotic. It has symmetry. We really examine it because it seems to be a godly spectrum, but intuition has symmetry. And what I examined about intuition was that it brought me information beyond the dynamic of how I was processing information previously. So when I got this information, I first questioned it, because the source was outside the manner in which I was acquiring information. But when I then acquired the information didactically, I realized dialectically also that I recognized that, well, as I learned this, like, you know, 2 years ago, you know, I felt this, I knew this, I examined this, just in the spirit, just in my intuition, I knew this to be the case. And then I had evidence. So then I recognized that if this is the case, then we were living in an externalized version of our true nature, that somebody took something from us, i.e. an idea, and then put it outside and then said to us, this is all that we are, and we must force everything within ourselves to conform to that. And why do we respect Baba God? Because it came from within us. But if art doesn't speak another word or another truth or another version or another wavelength on the spectrum, we will all be prisoners to the repetitious, and we revive but don't evolve. So these things I found, that human existence suggests to me that when you're a seedling, you have the potential, but starved of the right nutrients or the right experience, you will never actualize your true potential. What we settle for is a version, what I call the aversion, what in Rasta they call a carbon copy. We settle for the aversion, the version thereof, and some, then you get the version to, right? That it's moving away from the true nature. Art in its truest essence, in all the forms, through all the psychosis and all the psychotic behaviors of its teachers, its instructors, is speaking a word from beyond the symmetry of our wavelength of understanding. But then there's quantum mechanics. So there are others within the acceptable field of knowledge who's thinking this way. The way they are expressing this in the collision of the atoms, the quarks, the neutrons, electrons, is coming to us at a strange level and at a strange wavelength. But the fact that it is beyond the atomic application of this knowledge, there's a cosmic, there's a celestial, which makes us dance with the sun, moon, and stars. Rastafari says 1-2 is the rhythm of the heartbeat. So when we're playing the reggae music, we're not playing a music that's coming from outside. We're playing a music that's coming from inside. Add the intuition to it, we've got the connection to the divine and the cosmos. add the intellect to it, we have the pervadence of history, the knowledge of our subjugation and the times before our subjugation and the time that is to come, call it philosophy, right? And our ideologies on what is most proper and appropriate for us to live. So art in its truest essence is still the organic, and it is truly the rhythm of our breath, the very nature of mind, body, and spirit as one. It really pulls from all, non-sparing, non-spirit. So art couldn't only be physical, it couldn't only be mental, it couldn't only be spiritual. That is why there is a definition between crafts and design. But even in the ancient symmetry, because my ancestors was pushing me to say this, even in ancient symmetry, Brother Dan, I want to teach you something about African symmetry. Did you know that the designs, and I won't go too deep, so my ancestors might feel I might tell too much, but did you know that in the design of what we call African-Americans and, you know, black and Africans call Nubian knots, cornrows, and the symmetry was crop circles were design patterns for harvesting and also had a cultural as well as an anthropomorphic and anthropological retention of the ancestry in just how they designed the hairstyle. Did you know this, Brother Man? This is a way in which this is why when we say, you know, we should get past the cosmogony and go to cosmology, then we understand that there is a deeper reasoning to African history and cultures, and that is how we now begin to understand the symmetry in the hairstyles had a lot to do with the retentions of your culture. So the art in human design was a part of the DNA memory. It's sort of like how somebody would say, maybe in the Jewish sense, their family tree or their family heritage, because I know in the Jewish heritage and history that family heritage is very important. And in African symmetry, coming from art and the organic nature, that was one of the most important things, and how to preserve that every child had the DNA of their ancestors was to do the tribal mark, was to do the tribal art, was to do the cornrows, the Nubian knots, and all the different designs in his life. Art retaining the essence of nature and our creator.
True. And also, I mean, listen, I mean, you can still see the hieroglyphics of ancient Egypt, which I don't know how people think this, but I mean, some people disassociate Egypt with Africa, but it's right at the, you know, it's right there, you know, on the continent of Africa. And my Rebbe, on more than one occasion, talked about Egypt at that time was the most intelligent civilization. It wasn't necessarily the first civilization that was in Africa, but it was there. And I know that I've seen from videos, and say like YouTube, that there are other cultures on the continent that had unique architectural designs that are still standing today. I mean, you know, you can go to Brooklyn, yeah. Here in yeah, I call it the future 51st state of America, because there's more unity here than the United Nations. You see buildings that if they're fortunate, they'll last 100 years, but yet the pyramids in Egypt and the structures in other parts of Africa are standing tall and strong, which means, first of all, they knew how to harness the power of produce. And within that extra time that they had, because they were efficient at use of their human agricultural skills and I guess, tending the flocks, that they could develop these structures and art, which is still standing tall and testifying into the creation, that there was an intelligence there that is still instructing us, and we would be well wise to learn from these things, because only a fool who's afraid to learn from everyone.
True, because revolution as opposed to evolution, going around in the same repetitious cycle, is a threat and a very serious problem in human cultures if all we can do is revolve and not evolve. There's a motion within the human psyche that says forward, be motivity. Motion is balance. Emotions, right. The energy of motion, right, coming through the spirit of our deepest fears, desires, our greatest hopes and dreams, or utilitarian or egalitarian. But in our essence, Egypt was what we in the studies of African antiquity said Egypt is the cosmo, or the cosmopolitan of the true progenitor of such knowledge, which is truly Ethiopia. But the issue with Ethiopia is Ethiopia was shrouded, hidden beyond generation, sorry, behind generation of secrecy because of how far Ethiopia was from the cultures that would then become the popular cultures of the modern age. And even many anthropologists and historians refer to Moro, Ethiopia, in very debasing terms, and it was even the premise for the invasion of the Italians. However, upon studying the anthropology archaeologically in Ethiopia, I began to realize that a lot of forms of art in architecture, i.e. Georgian and such forth, predate European life, rise to culture and Renaissance by thousands of years. All these modern structural designs, even known in Islam, Ethiopia predates those designs. They were first in Ethiopia. So the cosmopolitan Egypt, Osiris was an exiled general from Ethiopia. At first, he was quite an adventurous general under the auspices of the Ethiopian king.
Mm-hmm.
However, over time, his exploits grew to the kind of what we say what Egypt is today. We know why Egypt appears this way today. The transmigration of many populations have changed the organic nature of its true heritage. So even its glyphs are, I would say what they said, budged it a little. But the fact of the matter is, it is an external interpretation of an internal process that created that, i.e. the African in the experience has to truly decode the glyphs. Because you and I know, I might be taught to read Hebrew, but if Hebrew is your tongue, there are nuances and subtle projections and inferences that I would never get, because it is not didactic. It is not based upon the intellectual presentation in the language. It is based upon the intuitive, and it falls into the sounds and the little physical manifestations we have of our information react upon us. So when you read language, you begin to realize that if a Rastaman speaks about life and creation, when it is interpreted by an English-speaking European, there is always a perspective issue. That perspective will always be varied and be based upon experience. So you have Europeans who come and live the Rastafari life, and then they are then adaptive to the behaviors, right? But adaptation isn't origination. So as we examine these cultures and what they had said about life from the interpretation, we recognize that their connection with the environment, with nature around them, drove their heart. The fact that they didn't have lots of space to bury their dead made it very, because of the boggy lands, right? Made Egyptians have some of the most prolific and most vivid views of the afterlife, that they would preserve their dead so immaculately for a reincarnation in the physical. Because the dead in their culture was so a threat from where you buried them. They could so easily be, so a poor man's essence or his remains could be so lost. So in the essence of now we see it as art, but in the nature of how they lived, they made their existence resonate the knowledge they have of themselves. And so when I look at that, I say, here we are in our so-called modern humans in this time. Our lives through the arts that we absorb into ourselves and that we create out of ourselves should be towards unifying the splintering. And I always talk about it.
Right.
The splintering and the shattering, because after we shatter the glass ceiling in organic art, my next process is called the cleaning, where we clean up the mess of the shattered psyche, because all those fragments are broken pieces of a false image, a false icon. You can even say a false god, false ideology, improper beliefs. So now when all that is broken away, the truly organic, the truly empirical, the ontological is there. Now, how it expresses, and this is the point I've been trying to make all this program, what that ontological, what that empirical expresses, Brother Don, will be called art in all of its manifestations.
Yes.
But when some of the design or the arts of design society forget that deep intuitive, they smash elements to open portals or to cut interdimensions, while the interdimensional travel is on a different wavelength. And those who travel it are adept to because of the experience that they're having within themselves and how their culture secures their sanity or their astral and their pathic bodies during this course. So again, I say, in the Western world, some of the greatest minds are in atomic physics and atomic chemistry and biology. But in the African, the greatest minds are in the artistic, because that's where you have all of the branches of anthropology, all of the branches of the intuition, right down to other psychic sciences, to also the philosophical sciences, and also the prophetic. That is the going ahead in time to see what is yet to come, because the wavelength to where that experience is such a fine mathematical equation that where we are currently is dense. So those who are most attached to density couldn't travel to such a light space, i.e. the future, to see and be inspired. So again, these minds sometimes might have some psychological issues, but it's also treasure our artists, because they are instructors and instructional from the divine. And I do respect all the work in that field, not just for therapy, not just for healing, but just for the present, so we can evolve and not devolve.
Beautiful. I want to just backtrack one moment. This will definitely be a non-European perspective, Jerome Sage. One of the, I understand the two primary languages, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that the two primary languages in Ethiopia, or as we understand from the Torah perspective, Kush, is Amharic and Giz. Now, I don't know what to say anything about Giz, but Amharic, again, is a construction of two, we recognize it as two construction of two Hebrew words. Am means a people, Har means of the mountain, a people of the mountain. And we know that Ethiopia is a very mountainous terrain. So the language is a reflection of the landmass that a good sizable, I don't know if it's the majority of the people, but a good in Addis Ababa, right? That's a high range, that's on a mountain, right? So there is an or Imharik, or with the mountain, meaning people are seeking, they sought the wisdom out from those who, generally speaking, the mountain in our culture, the mountain are like our righteous ones. They're like mountains who tower over the masses of human society. I just want to mention also briefly, Jerome says, that this type of programming is part of my own personal healing, because actually, as I think I mentioned, or I've mentioned other programs, my father, may rest in peace, that he was a budding artist who went to a very fine art school here in New York City. It's called Cooper Union. And he had the talent, but he didn't have the connections. He didn't have the finesse. You know, he wasn't into the slick tongue. He just loved the art. But he took that and he put it into the world of mechanics, mechanical engineering. But after he retired, he returned, and between the time that he started his career as a mechanical engineer, he got into the art of preserving creation, becoming extremely anti-nuclear and promoting the art of self-sustaining energy sources, solar, biothermal.
Yes, I love your father.
And also he was in the town that I grew up with for 18 years, he started the first recycling center in that part of New Jersey. And what I feel a certain amount of pride, although I cannot say directly it came from him, but he was one of the molecules in motion that the high school I went to invested $1 million to put a solar panel so that in about 10 or 20 years they will pay off all the cost of that. And you see solar panels all over this area called Bergen County, New Jersey, which is in northern New Jersey. I'm not saying my father caused it, but I'm saying the artist, he started as an artist. and his ideas proliferated to the point where he started recycling in a recycling center out of his own time, blood, sweat, and tears. And now you can drive through northern New Jersey and see these solar panels. Now, again, I'm not saying my father caused it, but an artist should feel like that. They are a molecule in motion. And what is the artist's greatest request? Merely that he or she be allowed to pour out their accessing as their divine image and getting away and breaking away from the shattered image of human psyche, the shattered image of delusional presentations from the outside to us, but rather coming from within, extracting out, and not being surprised when they tap into that active godly intellect that we talked about at the beginning of the program.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I love your father already for that, because the truth is that the artist is also the catalyst, the catapult to moving thought forward. Because in the philosophical landscape, art has to be one of the major tools to move us forward. People love to talk about design, because design and crafts aren't, and think that they are final products in the end result of what art really is. But the true essence is that in the philosophical, art moves us into new states of experience, right? Because it is motivated by the spirit, the presence of God, to say, if we are using a particular form of energy that is potentially dangerous to the complete harmonization of our presence, then we should seek to not just make our mental, emotional, and psychological environments clean, are in tune with such a energy, but we should also seek to make the physical environment. Back to your point also on the mountains. There's a word in the word that says, look to the mountains, and whence cometh our health. Our health comes from the God who made heaven and earth. So the essence of it is the mountains being, the environment being a part of the construction of language is absolutely true. And then within a physicalized location, the dominant forces or the dominant region, i.e. a very vast landmass like Africa, the dominant regions and the dominant tribes, they affect what we call contemporary languages. Their essences is what is captured within the etymology of the construction of modern words. That being said, the value goes back to the fact that in all of that, the emotional, the intuitive, the intellectual, and then the physical and the manual manifestations, creations of art are still the stirrings of the divine, speaking through man, speaking as man, saying to man, woman, and child, here is life. Let us be as it is in heaven, so let it be on earth. So as it is in our most esteemed state of being, in either high, far away, eons, dimensions away in the psyche, we can reach it, so it should be in the presence of being, that we should live these things we call ideals, because ideally they are harmonious. Blessings, Brother Dan. It's been another great morning, and I just want to give thanks, and you know, let's give thanks to all who've been listening, all who have had a word of artistic inspiration, and always sending forth just that creative love. Blessings.
Amen. I just, one more thing I want to bring up, Drum Sage, and you're taking this up. The idea of art, you know, there's the artist, again, with that sweat and toil of him or her working on the easel or on the clay pottery wheel. But then they display their art, and it creates a positive form of human socialization. Like hopefully today, I believe with simple faith that you and I created this positive verbal socialization for other people listening, whether they're here in the Americas or around the world with the 37 countries that tune in, 37 states, United States of America. You're just a brief summarization on how art brings people together.
Well, one of the most important things about how art brings people together is that people are so conversational. This talk in psychology about our tribal nature is overplayed. People are so conversational. And even if there's another or six or ten other tribes, people want to know, so what's your language? How do you get down? How do you get boogie? How do you get spiritual? How do you get freaky? How do you get normal? How do you get straight? How do you party? So art, this interconnecting language, is saying God, divine source, has no fear or any lack in interpreting the multiplicity of the bubbling tongues of human psyche and human expression. So we, the artists who dare to be instructors, instructional, observe ourselves into that. So likewise, we now become the mouthpiece of divine. And so we unite cultures. We unite these so-called tribal groups, these so-called broken ends. We turn it into art. We make music out of it. We make poetry. We do pottery. We make tapestry. We sculpt. We fashion new organic societies, the ashrams of Gandhi's time. We put the artistic and the creative into a subtle new social and political movement. We call it indigenous rights. We call it whatever we feel. It is still art. And this is how we connect. This is how we flow into the greatest essence of who we are. And that's how we are.
Wonderful. Succinctly, Jerome Sage, how can others continue this conversation with you? How can human beings around the world connect with you?
Okay, well, number one, they can connect with me via, like, Facebook at Jerome Sage Butler, facebook.com. You can inbox me, and I'll get back to you. Or you can call me at 1-876-790-4371. That is 1-876-790-4371. And, you know, for therapy sessions and such, once you contact me, you'll get a WhatsApp contact, and then we'll keep connections, and we'll get into the maladies, the psychoses, and the things from a creative perspective that we can get on, get the junk out of your mind, shatter the glass ceiling, then we do the cleansing, and then we do the final process, which is called finding your sacred organic space, because after shattering the old views of yourself, cleaning them up, seeing the true organic nature that is like a little flower, it's a seed now that needs to be nurtured and allowed to grow and blossom into itself. Then you create the sacred organic space around that now to be able to secure your growing plant of destiny. So as your plant grows, so does your esteem, so does your awareness, so does the electrical magnetic energy within your psyche, within your physical being. More life to share with your kids, with your wife, with your boyfriend, with your girlfriend. More things to put into your physical life, expressions of the kind of place you want to put your home, not the kind of home you want, the kind of home you want to design, not living in the design of didactic minds, you understand me, but living in the design of actually organic, fluid, functional, aligned minds. So putting your art into experience, expressions, and getting yourself on the flow, dancing your troubles away, getting into the true rhythm of what life is about.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jerome Sage. And we've been in discussion with our co-host today, Sila Mita, prolific lecturer and artist, Jerome Sage Butler, who is committed. I mean, I hear it in his words. I hear it in the heartbeat that is emanating out and empowering his human speech to help all of us come to realize that we can shatter the distortions and the delusions of this Babylonian, recapitulated ancient Roman culture, and seek out to live in a way of ahavachad, one love, golacha, one destiny, kolon for all of us, badarchim darki shalom, in a peaceful and pleasant way. And as your Torah Askan, international, local, cyberspace, Torah Askan, Torah activist, Dondi Sigurdman, I want to remind everyone that we've got to be good, I've got to be good, Jerome Sage has got to be good, because the Teva Tov L'Heitiv is the nature of good, do good. And we are going to segue out with Roger Spark Shared Hearts, because when we share hearts one with each other, we all become one big heart, tapping into the heart of the universe, which is a potent way of accessing the blessings of the infinite creator to return this earth to the garden it was always meant to be. Take care, everyone.
I do. My love.
Casted aside with nothing to hide, only me. Didn't fight, only rest while I gave it my best and walked with a disagree. So I started off young, started to run to play. places I thought you would find me. No, you never did find, you only did hide the places I thought I would one day climb. But now we're here under his side. He gave me the tools that would help me climb higher than my original days. You see the best path of my way, so you told me to fly, not to get by. You see what I can be, now I'm out of my own, never alone, like a seed I was once a stone. So I started to breathe, you gave me my needs, you gave me the thoughts that I would. You dream me your dream of possibilities. You shared your heart with me. Oh, you dream me your dream.
Show me.